Hey, TV fans, it's another episode of TV Babble, the television podcast that takes you inside the best of TV, whether you watch on a tablet, your phone, computer, or, shocker, an actual television set. I'm Matt Rausch, senior critic at TV Guide magazine, and today we are doing something a bit different. Kelly Anakin, host of the Up Yours Downstairs and Red All Over podcasts, will be sitting down with TV Guide magazine writer John Russell to recap the first episode of Season 3 of Amazon Prime Video's Man in the High Castle. And I'll be back at the end of the podcast to give you my TV picks for the week.
Welcome, Kelly Anakin. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, John Russell. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. So we are going to be recapping the Season 3 premiere of The Man in the High Castle. Before we get started, do you want to tell the people a little bit more about what you do on your two podcasts?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am a stand-up comedian in the San Francisco Bay Area. I am a copywriter by day, TV recapper by nights and weekends. And so my first podcast, which got started in like 2012, is called Up Yours Downstairs! And we started out recapping episodes of Downton Abbey and have kind of kept things going. We've kept the lights on with recaps of things like The Crown and Peaky Blinders. We're doing Victoria right now, which is about to start its third season, I believe in winter of 2019. So we talk about a lot of like British period pieces, and it's a good time. We're excited the Downton Abbey movie is coming out next year. So we're kind of in like excited slash horrified mode as we move into that.
I think most of us are about that.
Well, movie. I mean, look, we were like, from season three onward, we were like, this show needs to end. And they kept it going for like seven seasons, which was great for our podcast. For our souls, not so great. So the other podcast is called Red All Over, and it's a recap of The Handmaid's Tale on Hulu. And we recap every episode. We have read the book. We have also done some recapping of other Margaret Atwood adaptations like The Handmaid's Tale movie and the Netflix series Alias Grace. And we are currently doing some explainer episodes about the Republic of Gilead. If you are not familiar with the show, that is the evolution of America, which, you know, becomes this horrible dystopia. So we're kind of just going through everything we know or we think we know from the book and the movie and the TV show and trying to cobble together, you know, what is this world? How did it happen? And, you know, what does it do? How does it function on a day-to-day basis?
Sure. So I know from listening to your podcasts that in your downtime, you enjoy watching The Man in the High Castle?
This is such a hard statement to respond to. Because, like, I was intrigued by The Man in the High Castle when it first launched. And same. I have not read the novella. I did download the audio book to potentially listen to before I got here, but it didn't happen. So you're welcome, Philip K. Dick. The state. So I was like, okay, this is, you know, what an intriguing notion if the Axis powers had won World War II.
Sure.
And that, I think, by itself would have been an interesting TV show. I start watching and you have two leads who are not good. They don't have chemistry together, even though I think they're supposed to be attracted to each other. I think that they have, you know, they've been intimate a number of times. So you've got these two people who are kind of not able to carry this very high concept show. On the other hand, you have Rufus Sewell. Sweet Zaddy, Rufus Sewell. I love him so much. I think we can get into this later. But, you know, he's playing this sort of like sympathetic, like American Nazi, not in an American History X kind of way.
Not in a contemporary,
contemporary alt-right white supremacist way. So you have that going on, and you kind of see the political machinations in Berlin, and also you see it more in San Francisco. We don't get a lot of information on what's happening in Tokyo for the Japanese contingent. And the way that I have been complaining about this show lately is that it's like if a prestige cable drama was created entirely by an AI. Because it has all these elements, mm-hmm. you know, it's got these sort of like anti-hero. I mean, this show has anti-heroes for days. Mm-hmm. I'm not really sure who we're supposed to be rooting for outside of Trade Minister Togomi, who is my favorite character on the show.
You're Togomi stan.
Yeah, like my favorite actor on the show is Rufus Sewell. Mm-hmm. My favorite character on the show is Togomi. So
do you want to kind of bring us up to speed on this terrible mistake we might have made?
I can try. So the action is primarily set in New York City and San Francisco mm-hmm. in what was formerly
your town, my town.
I know. Oh my gosh.
Bridging the gap.
We couldn't have possibly planned this better. We did very little planning, FYI. So New York and sort of the East Coast is under control of the Greater Reich, mm-hmm. which is what the Third Reich has styled itself in the wake of their victory.
Sure. That's the Nazis.
That's the Nazis, in case you have forgotten everything from history class, which many of you may have. I'm not here to cast aspersions. And then the west of the Rockies is under Japanese control. Mm-hmm. In between, you have the neutral zone,
okay.
which is sort of no man's land, what's left of America. Mm-hmm. I don't even know exactly what the deal is there.
Sure.
Apart from what we hear from a character in this episode mm-hmm. saying, it's mm-hmm. a mess. It's our mess.
Yeah.
So you've got the Rufus Sewell playing John Smith, a name I'm sure they meant to change. Before they got into production.
No, I love this name so much. And actually, I was going to talk about this.
Obergruppenführer.
Obergruppenführer John Smith.
Oh, my gosh. Well, because he was just Gruppenführer when we met him. Oh. He's been promoted through the ranks. And so he's, you know, oh, gosh, he's just, you know, your average Nazi dad next door. He's got three children and a wife, and he's just, you know, he's a career man.
Yeah, two children now.
Yeah, and, you know, the way that I sort of describe everything that happens in the American Reich mm-hmm. is, like, that's Mad Men. Like, that's the prestige drama that it reminds me of.
Okay.
Whereas San Francisco is a bit more like Homeland. There's a lot more, like, terrorism happening, a lot of law enforcement mm-hmm. kind of trying to root out these radical cells.
And apparently interdimensional travel now?
God, did that happen? So this is where, that really started in the first season.
Okay.
I'm like, how do you concisely explain this? Because in San Francisco, you have the characters, Juliana Crane, mm-hmm. Frank. That's, again, another name that maybe should have been changed. And then DJ Qualls, whose character name I never remember because all I can think about is the Mui road trip. Like, and I'm so happy DJ Qualls is working. DJ, if you're listening, I'm so happy for you. But I have such a hard time taking your character seriously.
Sure.
But he's a queer character, we find out later. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay. So I was right about how you were, like, obviously in love with Frank, which, like, I don't blame you. Like,
yeah.
Frank is my number one crush on this show.
Okay.
So he, like, Frank gets, I cannot believe that's his name. I keep saying Frank. We're just going to call him Frank.
Sure, Frank Squared.
Yeah. So Frank Squared gets brought in by the Japanese law enforcement, and, like, it comes out that he has Jewish blood in his family, and, like, they never knew, and, like, they kill his sister and her kids for reasons. Mm-hmm. And so somehow, you know, all this coalesces with Juliana's plot, which, like, her sister's with the resistance.
Right.
She's got these film reels.
Yes.
That they're trying to get to, quote unquote, the man in the high castle,
right.
who, spoiler alert, very, very much an anticlimactic reveal, is just Stephen Root. He doesn't live in a castle.
Nope.
I mean, he is a man, but okay.
Yeah.
So these films, we find out, are film reels from alternate realities, which is a very Philip K. Dick thing to do.
Sure.
Where there's all of these other possibilities for how World War II might have ended. Mm-hmm. But, like, that to me, there's bigger things at stake here than how World War II. Like, oh, there's other realities?
Yeah.
Let's focus extensively on World War II.
Right.
I mean, it's like, this is like if they presented, you know, like, Ancient Aliens meet Hitler on the History Channel, but, like, they were like, we're definitely admitting this is fiction.
Yeah.
So there's all of these other realities, and like, Juliana has to like track down her sister's birth dad and kill him for some reason. Mm-hmm. And then Joe, we haven't even talked about Joe. Joe is like the young corn-fed American Nazi, and he like winds up being mentored by Rufus Sewell's John Smith, but mm-hmm. then his dad is some other Gruppenführer, and he's in Berlin, and he's like trying to overthrow Hitler, who's mm-hmm. like fine. You know, he's alive. They thought he was going to die, but it turns out he's fine.
Oh, did he survive?
He did survive.
Okay, he's, I couldn't tell from
damn
the...
Damn it, I can't... You know what? I cannot tell the high-ranking Nazis apart in this, so I'm really excited to get into this.
I think the point is that they all
yeah,
look alike.
Yeah. So, anyway, he definitely survived, like, because okay. they talk about him in the present tense.
Okay.
And so he like goes to San Francisco with another film or to get a film.
Joe does.
Okay. And then he meets Juliana and they're like, we're in love because the script says. And they get involved and then like they wind up in the neutral zone. Mm-hmm. And then I don't really remember what happened in season two, to be perfectly honest with you, apart from the fact that Frank Squared mm-hmm. blew up a Japanese building. And Trade Minister Tagomi spent a bunch of time in, like, our reality mm-hmm. in the Bay Area in, like, the 60s where, like, his wife and son didn't die. His son married Juliana, who I have nicknamed DDLJ, like LL Cool J, but okay. dudes dig lame Juliana.
Sure.
Just everywhere she goes, dudes are like, oh, my God, who is this?
And that happens in this
episode. That happens in this episode. And I'm like, her?
Yeah. And so we also have alternate Trudy, Juliana's sister, mm-hmm. I believe, who figures pretty prominently in this.
Yeah, so, you know, Juliana has found the man in the high castle, and as far as we know, Frank Squared is dead. Mm-hmm. We don't see DJ Qualls and his hilarious, like, antiques dealer sidekick, who is another character that I love.
Okay.
And I do appreciate, because is he also queer?
I have basically sat out the last season and a half.
Okay. So. Well, so I think that he reads as queer, so I like that they're kind of like a queer buddy comedy, okay. but they're not like romantically interested in one another. Sure. I feel like that's rare.
Yeah.
Because even, you know, I realize this is not exactly like the epitome of like queer TV.
Sure.
Except that it is. But like in Will and Grace, there was always like, what? Why don't Jack and Will get together? And it's right. like, have you met either one of them? They should be isolated. So Juliana is apparently like the Luke Skywalker of all universes.
Sure. She's the fulcrum.
She's the fulcrum on which, yeah.
spins.
So she is always a good person in
if
every
that's
reality.
Not what a fulcrum is. Don't write in.
Yeah. It's a simple machine.
Sure.
I don't know. And Joe,
Juliana like, seems like a simple machine.
She is a very simple machine. She makes out with dudes and is generally pretty. Like, mm-hmm. that's what she does.
Everyone on this show is kind of forgettably pretty.
That's the thing. And that's where this sort of, like, AI thing. They're yeah. all, like, in the uncanny valley of production design and acting talent and attractiveness. Like, everything on the surface is like, yeah.
Yeah.
This all makes perfect sense.
Sure.
And then you dig, like, there's nothing mm-hmm. there.
No.
The only person who's really doing anything super interesting in this episode, anyway, is Rufus Sewell,
right.
because he's always amazing.
Yeah.
And I would also say that Trade Minister Tagomi, who's Kerry Hiroyuki Tagawa, I apologize to the entire nation of Japan.
I'm so happy that you tried to pronounce
yeah,
someone's
you're welcome.
Name first.
I'm here to like boost you up.
Thank you.
We just call him Kerry.
I did so well on Obergruppenführer.
Obergruppenführer. That's like
John
that's
Smith.
Like an acting school warm-up.
Yeah.
You know, like Obergruppenführer. Or like when you're like saying like hubbub, red leather, yellow leather, Obergruppenführer. So yeah, so we're in season three and the attempts to overthrow Hitler on the Berlin side have been thwarted and Joe and his father were like thrown into prison,
mm-hmm.
and then Juliana's hanging out in the neutral zone.
Yeah.
And really, there's not much going on in San Francisco. We have Chief Inspector Keto, mm-hmm. who is like the Oscar the Grouch of this whole thing, where he's just always very grumpy for reasons I don't entirely understand. I'm like, why are you mad all the time? Like, you won the war.
He's a cop.
He's
grumpy.
A cop. Yeah, there's other less grumpy cops. But,
that's true.
He's also notable because he murdered Juliana's sister, Trudy. See, now we're going to get really confusing because it's like, so the
main timeline.
Yeah, in the main timeline of the show, he killed Trudy and he saw Frank die in a bombing attack. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of still in the wake of these bombing attacks in San Francisco when we pick up here.
Yeah.
The other big thing is that Obergruppenfuhrer Smith's son, Thomas, had a congenital disease of some kind.
Right.
And was having these sort of like seizures.
Yes.
And Obergruppenfuhrer Smith and his wife, Mrs. Obergruppenfuhrer Smith, were like, oh, we're going to like send him to South America and he'll be fine. And like, we'll make sure he doesn't like, he killed the doctor that knew about it. Mm-hmm. There's been this whole cover up, but then like the son got so caught up in the Nazi spirit in the wake of his father helping to thwart this like plot against the Führer that he was like, you know what? I know I have this defect. I'm going to go have myself euthanized, you know, for the Reich.
For the Reich.
And his parents were like, no, we didn't mean it.
Yeah. That sets us up pretty well for...
If you're
not with us at this point, maybe just go watch the show and
I don't
report
think,
back.
Look, I don't think it's going to solve their problems, to be perfectly honest. And I mean, the thing that I struggle with watching this show as a consumer, but also as a critic...
Yeah.
I've read, you know, other responses, and it's like a lot of the people who will recap or critique the show like get very angry about like, are they trying to make us like empathize with a Nazi? And I'm like, well, yeah, I don't know why else you would tell this story.
Right.
And it's just like, it feels like there's always this sort of like posturing from the point of view of the recappers, like, whoa! And I honestly wish there was more of just engaging with the like mundane sort of compromises you have to make, not you, like, but just like these characters are making these compromises.
These are all people who were Americans and
they
have
were
been
Americans and have,
co-opted.
You know, and they made the choice to defect and, you know, be part of this new government.
They're not, it's not like the entire like country is now populated by Germans who invaded.
Exactly. I mean, you know, they're there.
Sure.
They're certainly there, but it's Americans who are like, well, okay, cool. And like, we know that Obergruppenfuhrer Smith kind of, you know, made his Nazi stones in the American concentration camps in my hometown, Cincinnati, Ohio, which I don't want to give this show too much credit for world building in general, and we'll get into why later, but that is absolutely where they would be if that happened. So Cincinnati, do better. Okay. Don't be like this Cincinnati.
All right. So episode one, season three. Now more than ever, we care about you.
That just feels like a slap in the face as a title for this show. I'm like, you do not. You're literally a bot. You're a bot show. But I can't stop watching. So, you know, joke's on me.
Yeah. So we open with some soldiers approaching an old-timey truck. But no, it's a trap, and they are all gunned down. I have no idea who any of these people are, except for Giuliani.
Nor does at any point in this episode any information become clear about this.
I forgot about this scene until I came
did too.
Back to
I watched this episode not that long ago, and then I rewatched it in preparation for this. So you're welcome, America, and other English-speaking nations / people. And I was like, oh my God, did this even happen? Like, what?
Yeah, was this the future? Is this just what she does now?
Nobody ever, it's like, oh, so you're just a guerrilla soldier?
And then,
on top of, like, you know, being your sister's, like, peer counselor.
Yeah, a Time Lord or something.
This could be her too much credit. She's like a Time Baronet at best.
Ah, sure.
Yeah.
So then we get the credits, which are set to Michael McDonald's Mad TV character Stuart singing the Nazi national. No, it's not the Nazi national. It's Edelweiss.
Yeah, it's the Austrian. Well, I mean, it's not even. It's from The Sound of Music.
Uh-huh.
It may have also been. Look, I don't know.
Sure.
Look, I don't like. I'm giving this show a lot of crap, but I don't really know that much about history.
It's an interesting choice. This particular version of this song.
So I actually really like the credits for this.
They're pretty. And
they're
disturbing.
Pretty, and I also think that they're the most worthy successor to the Game of Thrones credit sequence.
Fair,
totally. They set you up in a geographic sense, and it's like, here's who's here, and in these parts of the nation, and it's right on that cusp of like being super creepy,
yeah,
but like soothing, and you're like, okay, oh, like, are people fine with this?
But that,
it does go on a bit long.
But that voice singing that song, is it a Muppet?
It's like a German accented nightmare person.
It's a little too breathy for my taste.
It's a manic pixie Nazi girl.
It absolutely is.
Actually, we haven't met our manic pixie Nazi girl yet. She'll be coming up here shortly. Yeah.
Stay tuned, folks. So so from the credits, we go into kind of a bunch of like short, you know, short scenes.
It's a torture montage,
bringing us up to speed where everyone is. Joe is in Berlin being tortured, of course, by Dr. Mangala, because who else?
And I've watched, spoiler alert, I've watched ahead,
mm-hmm,
and he shows up in a bunch more. And again, just none of these higher ranking Nazis who are like actual historical figures. I'm like, who are you?
Yeah.
Should I be watching more Ancient Aliens meets Hitler? Like, would that help me?
I don't care for this character's beard. He's generally kind of cute. And
he is like, that's, and I think I give him more credit for being a better actor than Giuliana,
mm-hmm,
specifically because he shares so many more scenes with Rufus Sewell. And I think Rufus Sewell,
brings out the best in
a rising
all of us.
Rufus Sewell lifts all boats. You know what I'm saying?
Totally. Then we go to Utah in the Japanese Pacific States, where the Japanese, including Trade Minister, can you want to do this?
Nobusuke.
Nobusuke.
Tagomi.
They're testing bombs.
Hydrogen bombs.
Do I have this right? Have they sent one of the films, one of the High Castle films to the Nazis, making them think they've got a,
I think so,
better bomb than they,
yeah,
have?
Okay. I believe that they have. However, what they have done, like, they finally now have parity with the Reich. Mm-hmm. Because I believe in this timeline, the Nazis cracked the, mm-hmm, the nuclear bomb situation, mm-hmm, before the US did.
Mm-hmm.
So like, that's their whole thing is, mm-hmm, you know, the primary difference is like, oh, they just got the A-bomb first, which,
yeah,
you know, again, that I don't mind from a world building perspective.
Sure.
Because most of the scientists who worked on the Manhattan Project were in fact refugees from the Nazis.
Right.
Or people that we just like straight up kidnapped.
Sure.
And we were like, oh, you're doing this now.
So basically they're like, okay, cool, we got this. We both have bombs.
Yeah.
Okay. That I'm sure will matter later in the season.
Yeah, totally. And sure. And we get a scene with Tagomi and an admiral kind of talking about all this. And like, Tagomi's more like worried about like the financial situation.
Right.
As the trade minister. That makes sense.
That's his job. I know. He's just
He doesn't care about nuclear winter. That's more of a meteorological minister's problem.
Okay, then we move on to Giuliana, who is hanging out in the neutral zone with alternate Trudy, Hawthorne, who is the man in the High Castle, and his wife, who is played by Anne Magnuson.
Who is she?
Anne Magnuson.
Oh my gosh, I have struck gold. Please tell me more.
Okay, I probably don't know enough about her. She was mean to me in an interview once.
Oh no!
Maybe mean is the wrong word. Impatient with me. I was in my
20s. It's oh, well, wow.
She's
Aaron Magnuson. We were all in our 20s.
We all were. She was a performance artist here in New York
Like
the 80s.
I'm very upset already.
She did this. She did an actually really interesting.
Did she do the thing with the gun?
I don't think she did.
Okay.
She may have done something with a gun.
Cool. Didn't they all?
They all did. She did a video piece that was basically just her playing different characters as the channels flipped.
Okay.
That was really cool. She has a band called Bong Water with an amazing song called Obscene and Pornographic Art, which I highly recommend.
Okay.
And then she went to Hollywood and did a bunch of movies. She's the Madam in Tank Girl.
Oh.
And that's the last
I feel like if I was looking at her IMDb, I'd be like, oh.
You would. You would definitely.
So she's like that lady.
I was excited to see Anne Magnuson has some work.
And Hawthorne's name, there's a meme going around that's like your college dorm and your, I think the first pet you had that died is your like Republican senator name or something like that. Or like, now I can't remember. But anyway, the dorm that I lived in college was Hawthorne.
Oh, wow.
So I'm like, oh.
There are a lot of names in this show that, like you were saying earlier, that really feel like they just, you know, spun a wheel or put names into a character name generator.
Yeah, or they were just like, oh, you know, first draft, great, we're done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just, nobody cares about character names. Yeah. We're not going to be saying these over and over again for years, apparently.
Right. So then in New York, Obergruppenführer John Smith, a.k.a. Rufus Sewell, a.k.a. ORS? Obergruppenführer Rufus Sewell?
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
So ORS returns home. His family is still, you know, super shooken by the death slash sacrifice of his son, Thomas. Particularly Mrs. Obergruppenführer.
Yeah, because she's just not even there. Like, no. He gets home and his two daughters are alone. And he's like, where is your mom? And they're like, oh, she's, like, gone. And he's like, okay, where is your, like, nanny? And they're like, oh, mom sent her home. And but he's such a great dad. Like, and I can't decide if this show's like, do I want you to be my daddy or my daddy? Because it's a really tough choice. But he's just like, oh, let's see if we can't rustle up some dinner. And it's just like, but again, it's this thing. It's like, oh, he's just like this red-blooded American dude.
Yeah.
But he's a high-ranking Nazi.
Right.
It is very cognitively dissonant.
Yeah.
And
it's Rufus Sewell.
Very sexy.
Have you ever seen Cold Comfort Farm?
Yes. I forgot he was in that.
The whole point is that he's sexy and oversexed.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because my origin Rufus Sewell was Dark City. Which, now in retrospect, might explain why I always choose the wrong man. and I still don't look like Jennifer Connelly. I mean, who can?
Who among us?
Come on. I mean, apart from Jennifer Connelly.
So, moving on. Juliana, neutral zone. She gets a postcard from Aunt Trudy, and right away I'm like, this is a fake person?
Yeah, and she's in Denver, the Greenwich Village of the West. It's just very like, ooh.
So who is Aunt Judy? Is this important?
I have no clue.
Okay.
It is some contact of hers within the resistance. And at first I was like, is this like, did Trudy move? And she's like, picked a very bad fake name.
Judy, Trudy.
Rudy.
Rudy.
Rudy Tootie, fresh and fruity.
But
the only place I can have an IHOP now is a neutral zone.
Sure.
Yeah.
So the more important thing here, though, is that she needs to find Aunt Trudy's address, which sends her to a very sexy, fancy bar where I want to go. She meets someone named Wyatt Price, who is basically an Irish Han Solo.
Yes.
And tell me if you think I'm right. He seems like the type who would do anything, get anything you need for a price.
I'm not going to disagree with you, but I'm very angry about this pun. I object to this pun. I am not at home to this pun.
Not a party to the pun?
Oh, no, not.
Okay.
Nope.
All right. So, where
were we? I underestimated you.
Most people do. So he can get, he can get her the address she needs. He says, come back tomorrow. Much like the Wizard of Oz.
But I also was just like, you are very confident.
Yeah.
Like, how, like, because he doesn't have any more information than she does.
They're both just like, okay.
I don't know. Well, because, and I loved, because she has picked up this postcard.
Mm-hmm.
Arguably the most sympathetic character in this entire show was the guy working at the post office. Who I think he was like a Native American.
Uh-huh. Because Denver.
Yeah. And he was just like, and she was like, there's no return address, and you're reading my mail. He's like, it's a postcard. Like, his level of disdain for Juliana, I think, is why I found him so sympathetic.
So back at the ranch, I guess, Hawthorne and Caroline.
It's a literal ranch.
Yeah. They're minding a little mind-bended alternate Trudy, who is a little discombobulated because...
Yeah, she's kind of doing like a mix between like Nell from the movie Nell and Mia Jovovich's character in The Fifth Element, where she's just like, what, why?
Yeah. We're condensing storylines here a little bit.
Look,
but
there's no point in belaboring this.
There's like, a lot.
There's so much.
I
was like, why? I was just like, God, too much happens in this. This did not all need to be in one episode. Because we don't even see DJ Qualls.
It's a very long episode.
Because he's also in the neutral zone. And they were like, we can't. We simply can't.
So Juliana checks on Trudy, who is feverish and looking crazy pants. Because this isn't her reality. Juliana practices some shooting with Ann Magnuson, and they discuss shooting.
Oh, so this is where Ann Magnuson has a gun.
Yes, this is where Ann Magnuson has a gun. You were right.
Oh, silly me.
And Magnuson says that the two sisters are like magnets drawn together.
Yeah, and then Juliana's just like, sci-fi. Yeah, sisters. And I'm like, why do you ruin everything, Juliana? Stop talking. Close your beautiful mouth.
So over in Berlin, Dr. Mengele is still brainwashing Joe, and he's very pleased with the brainwashings.
Yeah, he was like, he kept saying something about like having a steel heart. And I'm like, this is like the Wizard of Oz in reverse, Dr. Mengele.
I thought that was Joe's father.
In the first torture montage, he kept saying a steel heart, and I'm like, you're wasting your time with this one. He has no point of view. He doesn't care about stuff.
Yeah. He just looks pretty.
He looks pretty because he's a Lebensborn, which was part of Hitler's weird, like, genetic, machinations.
Oh, so there's a reason everyone is CW pretty on this.
Well, only the people who were, like, born in Berlin.
Sure, okay.
You know, gotcha. The rest of them, just luck, I guess. It's just that Pacific air.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So
CW attract. They're not orange enough, John.
It's like they're like cotton candy. It just melts on your brain, and when you're not looking at them, you forget them.
Yeah.
They would be great spies.
I mean, some of them are.
Yeah, it's true. So
or they are spies. I wouldn't say anybody in this is a great spy because I feel like they're all leaving paper trails and just being very obvious
postcard trails
all the time. Yeah.
So Dr. Mengele takes Joe or somebody, some soldiers take Joe to see his father, Reich Minister Martin Heussmann.
And he's like, remember when I said we could rule the galaxy as father and son? I'd like to take that back, please.
Basically dad is like, Joe, you know, it's fine. Shoot me. And he does.
Well, that even, yeah. And like, there's this whole thing where like his dad is still in a cell and he's like screaming like our name, our blood. And it's no good, man.
Yeah.
Look where you both wound up, you dingus.
Yeah. So.
And this is where he says again, Steelheart. Because like, basically he's like, you have to kill me.
Yeah.
But I'm like, what did anybody do? Why is this happening? Like, I know that he was trying to overthrow Hitler. Mm-hmm. But like Joe, like was not involved.
Oh, was it? He wasn't involved?
No, he just, like, showed up, and his dad was like, by the way, I'm overthrowing the Fuhrer. And Joe was like, oh. And then Obergruppenfuhrer Smith was like, not on my watch.
Yeah. And so that landed them all in prison, and now a clean-shaven Joe has to read a prepared statement renouncing his father and the scheme to assassinate Hitler.
Yeah, and that's when he shoots.
That's when he shoots.
And then they give him this weird Nazi pin, which is like a new, you know, they like rebranded the swastika or something.
I was going to ask what that pin was.
It hasn't been explained yet. Mm. I think.
Is that the upside down
peace
sign?
Yeah, it's like the upside down peace sign.
Yeah.
Look,
which seems a little on the nose because
you haven't even gotten to the next round of imagery.
Well, all of the, if you're in New York, you'll see on the subway, all of the subway posters.
I have indeed seen them.
Peace sign. And it's like, oh, you did that so you could invert it into a peace sign.
And again, it's like AI. They were like, you know, computer. We need a symbol that's not a swastika. And the computer was like, okay, good.
Well, now that Amazon has changed its algorithm, how are they going to make this show anymore?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, look, strap in for season 4.
Okay, back to Juliana.
Oh, God. Do we have to?
She's basically the biggest part of this episode.
She's the biggest part of this episode and the show, and I hate her the most.
So she's back with Hawthorne watching some films. Hawthorne explains that his first film was a fake and that word of mouth got around to dimension hoppers, I guess.
And again, guess what? This show works so much better if he's just some Yahoo who makes fake movie reels.
Yeah.
I don't need the rest of it. It's like, why are you bringing, like, is this Sliders? Is that girl from Sports Night going to show up with, you know, that guy who's improbably married to Rebecca Romaine? Like, what is happening? O'Connell. The lesser
Jerry,
O'Connell.
Jerry O'Connell.
Yeah.
Yes. Who has a straight guy show on Bravo now? Is that who I'm thinking?
What does that mean? A straight guy show on Bravo?
I believe he has a talk
show. Do you have a fever? Like, what's happening?
I believe this is a real thing.
What
Jerry
is this country
O'Connell
coming to?
Has a show on Bravo. It's a talk show where he and other straight guys talk about housewives, I think.
About the show. Like
all of the housewives.
Or like their wives. Because that's quite rude. And frankly, it's more of a satellite radio thing.
Okay, so Juliana spots something in the films, and it's Baby Her, circa February 1942. And Hawthorne insists this is just a coincidence, but Anne Magnuson says, no, this is kismet, and it proves that Juliana is supposed to take over for Hawthorne, because he's like dunzo with making fake films.
Take over? Doing what exactly? This is my, like, what has he done apart from, like, amass all these weird films? Like, it doesn't really add up to anything.
And he seems to have some sort of idea of her destiny, because there is a film of her life and he knows how it ends. Is this a thing?
There's all of these films and in a lot of these films, basically, like, she shows up in a bunch of them. We are going to find this out later. Mm-hmm. So, like, spoiler alert, she's in all of the films that have survived.
Yeah. And right. Because he tried to burn all of them, but Anne Magnuson says Hawthorne.
He didn't burn all of them. He took all the ones that have Juliana in them and he sent them to Trade Minister Tagami.
That seems like some selective editing, if I'm being honest.
In terms of the show or in terms of the characters?
In terms of the character. Oh, You've got all these alternate histories and you only not burn the ones with your friend in them?
Well, her goodness is so transcendent, you know.
Sure.
I guess.
So later on, Juliana wakes in the night, which we can barely see anything because, like most prestige streaming dramas, this show is too bleeping dark. You cannot see
what
a damn thing.
What magical television am I supposed to buy?
I
run into this all the time with The Handmaid's Tale. They're like, look how dark it is. It's busted. It's dark. And I'm like, I can't see anything. Did the Red Sox win the World Series at some point? I don't know.
So from what we can gather, she's going downstairs. And I initially was like, don't go in that room because Anne Magnuson and Hawthorne are having sex.
I also thought, well, and I had watched it before, and when I watched it again, I was like, I feel like I would remember if these two were, you know, getting it on old people style, which, look, good for them.
Totally.
I fully support that, but it's not. They make the obvious choice of them just being kidnapped murdered or something.
When she does open the door, this perception is not helped by the fact that both of them are wearing dingy, vaguely taupe-colored depression nightgowns and are being
manhandled. Yeah, the neutral zone, where it never stopped being the Dust Bowl.
And they're being manhandled by ruffians in gimp masks. Yeah. So
it's very Pulp Fiction.
Yeah. But Juliana manages to shoot both of the attackers and Trudy shoots the third.
Which I don't believe. Like, she's not in a good way. I'm like, okay, okay.
Yeah, it's some sharp shooting for old crazy pants Trudes. So Juliana searches the would-be kidnappers, and one of them is wearing that upside down peace sign pin. Which, you know, before you explain that, I was like, are these good guys? Because
I believe they mark some kind of Reich assassin.
Okay.
Based on sort of what happens with Joe in this episode. And again, I've seen more of this.
They did all drop at once.
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago.
Yeah. I'm actually way behind by the Zeitgeist standards.
It is decided that everyone must flee the ranch. Hawthorne and Anne Magnuson head off to God knows where and won't tell.
Never
Juliana.
To be seen again. This show doesn't need any more characters.
They won't tell Juliana really anything about the surviving films that have been sent to Tagomi because
of whatever the opposite of narrative economy is, basically.
Thank you. Right.
Narrative profligacy.
If you are a literary professor, don't write in.
Please find me on Twitter. I have some questions.
So Juliana and Trudy, alternate Trudy, go off and stay in a hotel. But not before Hawthorne can tell Juliana that that she and Tagomi have a deep connection, but he refuses to explain more.
Yeah, great.
Except that Tagomi knows how this all ends for Juliana because she's in every one of the remaining films.
God, I hope it's soon.
And Hawthorne tells her that she's got to get to Tagomi and have him show her the films. And I believe I speak for Kelly and I when I say, can we just cut to the fucking chase already?
Oh, absolutely. I look, and we're not spoiler alert, we're not going to. In this episode.
Speaking of not cutting to the chase and more characters who are barely in this
episode. Except I do like this new character. I think it's very interesting.
Yeah, so this is, we moved to San Francisco where Chief Inspector Kido hires Sergeant Nakamura.
Yeah, just Nakamura.
Nakamura.
Yeah.
Who is half Japanese, half white, and is therefore not to be trusted by the Japanese, apparently.
Yeah, so Kido asks him, he's like, oh, we know, where do your loyalties lie with your Japanese father or your white mother? And the guy, he's like, what do you want me to say? I just want a job. This is like when you go on a job interview and they're like, so tell us why you love this company.
Because
and
you're going to hire me?
Yeah, maybe? And I'm like, because health insurance. Like, why do I have to?
Nakamura's job is to find Hagen, who, please explain to me who this is.
He is the leader of the resistance cell that Frank Squared was part of with a bunch of other people, most of whom either died in the attack on the government building or have been tracked down by the Kempeitai, which is the name for the Japanese police in San Francisco, and executed.
Okay, okay.
But I do love, Kido has such a great line reading here where he's like, I cannot interrogate a corpse.
Fair enough, yes. So this means that Hagen must be brought back alive.
I guess I like Kido. I'll add him to the characters I don't hate and who can stay in my radical edit of Man in the High Castle.
Sidebar, Nakamura, really cute.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Listen. There's so many cute guys.
So many. Everyone on the show is cute.
So many beautiful women. Everybody looks good.
Everyone on the show is cute. Okay, so back to Joe, who is now in New York, visiting with Obergruppenführer Rufus Sewell.
And this is strange because they should be on the outs more than they are because he had him.
But Joe is brainwashed now.
He is brainwashed, but like he's the reason that he's brainwashed.
Right.
I mean, we find out later that Joe has kind of ulterior motives in just being in the United States, period.
But. Right. Yes. Everybody's double crossing. So Obergruppenführer Rufus Sewell is sending Joe to San Francisco undercover as a deputy trade attaché, which I cannot spell.
That's a hard one.
Or maybe the spell check on here is funky.
It's fine. You know what? This is really a visual joke. So
it really is.
We'll tweet about it later. We'll try to spell it and see what Twitter says.
So
In that case, we do want a literary professor to write in.
Yes, please do. Obergruppenführer Rufus Sewell gives Joe some money, makes some jokes about how expensive Manhattan is.
Which I look, because he's like, oh, Manhattan, you know, it's almost as expensive as Berlin these days. Which, that was a world-building thing that I like. Because, the whole of the globe has been kind of repositioned. And we do get the sense that, from a technological perspective, the Reich is more advanced than the Japanese Empire.
Okay.
And just, you know, the idea of New York being the most cosmopolitan city in the world, which I don't even think that's true. I think it's probably Dubai. This is a multi-factor equation, which we don't have time to get into. It's like one of those, like, it's like the board that Kido has for, like, the whole resistance.
A murder board.
But, so that I do like. You know, there's some other things that are so on the nose here that it made me so angry.
Yeah.
But Joe apologized. He's like, oh, I'm sorry to hear about your son.
Yes,
and Rufus Sewell's like, sorry to hear about your dad. And it's like, oh, can't you crazy kids just have a surrogate father-son relationship like in season one?
Yeah. So they exchange condolences in a very sort of like tense male masculine kind of way.
Gosh, that seemed awful.
And that,
I cried in front of a bunch of strangers on Sunday. It was breathtaking.
That's the way to live.
Yeah, look, I can't live any other way, so I tried.
So,
people are like, have you tried not crying in front of strangers? And I'm like, yeah, I have. It doesn't work.
So, Joe leaves, and Obergruppenführer Rufus Sewell asks Eric, is this someone we should know?
I believe Eric is just his assistant.
Sure.
And Eric, I believe,
Eric
has
is
been
a red shirt?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I think he's like a yellow shirt, because he's been around for a bit. I believe that he's been Obergruppenführer Rufus Sewell's right-hand man since season one.
Okay.
So he's moved up the ranks with him.
So much so that he is asked to take care of Joe discreetly and personally. So that's
well, and
seems
I mean,
ominous.
Also, but it also seems like, yeah, he's gonna be a spy. Mm. One would hope, like, I believe that's the point of the orders. Mm. It's like, hey, we need him to have an airtight cover, so don't go around being like, hey, remember this guy?
Yeah.
Oh boy, listen to what we gotta do.
And this is the moment, the next scene is the moment where I was just like, sweet Jesus, more different people.
And then he didn't write anything else in the recap. I'm kidding. There's quite a bit more.
At least a page.
We're not even like halfway through the episode.
So these other different people are Minister of Propaganda, Billy Turner.
Who looks a lot like Billy Crudup.
Huh.
He's sure. Not Billy Crudup, but he looks like Billy Crudup to me.
I feel like there are so many combinations of names in this show that are like Billy Crudup, Billy Magnuson, and Magnuson, yeah. Billy Turner. It's a lot.
Sounds like a new murder board.
Minister of Propaganda Billy Turner is annoyed that, quote unquote, some German chick, Natalie Dormer, is, no, not Natalie Dormer. It's not Natalie Dormer, guys.
Nicole Dormer.
Played not by Natalie Dormer.
Played by Bella Heathcote.
Bella Heathcote.
This kind of rounds out my favorite characters because I loved her. Because she's also Lebensborn, like Joe. Mm-hmm. But she's just like, yes, this is what I do. And again, it's like, I don't like, you know, you're meant to feel kind of conflicted because mm-hmm. she's kind of fabulous.
Yeah. But also a Nazi.
Yeah. Like if this show was at all popular, this is who drag queens would want to imitate. You know what I'm saying? Like, well, her and maybe this reporter who comes in later. But
well, also because her sort of full on snap reading of Minister of Propaganda Billy Turner's freedom or fascism is freedom campaign. Uh-huh. She's basically like fascism for spring, groundbreaking.
Yeah, it's very embarrassing for him. Well, and she does such a great job because like he's complaining about this as he comes into the room and he's like, oh, some German chick straight off the rocket plane. And I'm like, oh, great. We have rocket planes.
Yeah. And then he's only
there's not a coherent narrative.
He's only embarrassed because she's pretty.
Yeah, and she's like, oh, Nicole Dormer, German chick. And I'm like, yes. And then, you know, she's like, oh, but my uncle, and her uncle is Himmler. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, because she's like saying all these things that she wants to do. And she gets the title line where she's like, oh, like we've seen all this before. And he's like, no, I just wrote it. And she's like, why don't we go with something like now more than ever, we care about you.
Yes.
Because like the point of his campaign is to like get women to have more kids.
Yes.
And
more
Nazi babies. He's just giving it the hard sell. Like, yeah, propagate.
And
like,
she wants to finesse it a little.
Yeah. And also as somebody who is a copywriter, even by period appropriate standards, mm-hmm. this is awful copy on his part. It's very bad.
So back to Jules and Trudes, as I'm calling them. They're smoking and brooding in their secret hotel hideout.
They're smoking that reefer.
Oh, is that, are they?
Yeah, they are.
I didn't catch that. It's a very dark show.
This made me very angry because, like, they're talking about, you know, these various realities and who they had to kill.
Mm.
And, you know, Jules feels very bad
that
she killed Trudes' dad. And Trudes just like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, he got killed in this other way. And it's just like, okay, great.
And then everything's cowabunga, so.
Yeah, well, and Trudy's like, oh, let's go to a bar.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, gee, oh, I don't know. Maybe the Reich is looking for you and you're high. Mm-hmm. I can't think of a worse situation to go out in a strange town and, like, get drunk.
Except that they have to go to the sexy bar where they run into sexy Irish Han Solo again.
I feel like that happened by accident. Because, like, they're there, and it's like, oh, already? Like,
yeah, he just happens to have Aunt Judy's address.
We still don't know who Aunt Julie.
No.
Judy
Trudy.
Real story, I had an Aunt Julie, so I'm like, it's very confusing for me.
But so then there's some flirting and between Jules and sexy Irish Han Solo.
Yeah, and I felt like, I don't know if you caught the singer. The singer had such a Buddy Holly-esque
look.
Totally.
Oh, yeah.
And I looked to see if he was credited as, like, Buddy Holly survived.
I know, same.
Because that's exactly the kind of BS they like to pull on
right.
this show.
Mm-hmm.
Which bugs me.
Yeah.
Because it's going to come in here a bit more later, but it's mm-hmm. like, he's in Fool's Rush In.
You're right, yes.
And I'm like, okay, so Elvis Like, yeah, is he a person?
Yeah.
Like, how, you know, where does the culture come from? Exactly.
And why hasn't this reality changed your outlook enough for the lyrics to change?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, it's just like, it's such a cheap, like, shortcutty thing to do. Mm-hmm. 'Cause it's like, look, is this a different reality or is it not?
Yeah.
Because they do such a good job, I feel like, on some of the production design. Mm-hmm. But I do feel like the clothes would be so different. Mm-hmm. Because everybody's wearing the same Western style clothing.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's just not as much of, you know, a Japanese inflected sensibility for the people in San Francisco.
Sure.
And it's like, shouldn't it be a bit more European?
Right. Yeah. Okay, so.
Although we know Chanel is still around.
Oh.
I don't know if that happens in this episode. Wait, of course she is.
It doesn't happen in this episode.
It doesn't happen in this episode, but like, listen, spoiler alert. There is a queer lady relationship that happens, and they talk about Coco's a dear friend.
Ah, and also it's, potentially a Nazi.
Yeah, oh, definitely. I think in this reality, definitely a Nazi. Okay.
Good to know.
Yeah.
So Trudy heads home, and Jules and Irish Han Solo do a little bit of flirting, a little bit of dancing, a little bit of more flirting. They're both a little reluctant to reveal their true agendas to each other. So they just have a smooch and...
Yeah, because you know what I like to do with people that I don't trust? Make out? Yeah. Once again, Dark City.
Actually, I mean, that's actually not a joke, is it? Because I mean, I feel the same way.
Yeah. Listen, we are children of the 80s. What are you going to do?
So
just say no to trust.
So Jules heads home and... you know, Trudy's in the bath, and here's the thing. You know, in film or TV, whenever you see a sad girl in the bathtub, you know things aren't going to go well.
Oh, yeah, it's not great.
It's not great. So Trudy starts having some seizures, and then calms down pretty quickly, and what are these flashes that we get? Are they having some kind of mind meld?
I believe this is Juliana remembering memories from alternate realities that she has not lived.
Okay.
And yes, I am employing my extra special knowledge of future episodes because there is no way you would know that just from watching this.
Okay.
Because it's not clear the way they film it. It's like, who's have, like, is this Juliana or is it Trudy having this?
It is the sort of show, as long as this episode is, it does seem like it's the sort of show that relies a lot on the assumption that you're going to binge it. But how the hell could you binge something like this?
I tried. I have tried, but it's like I get through. Like I quit. I think I'm on episode 5, and I just like was like I can't. I simply can't. I took a break, and I came to New York.
Pace yourselves, listeners.
Take deep breaths.
So these flashes give Juliana the brainwave that we must find Tagomi. I assume because the next day. She and Trudes are on a bus bound for San Francisco.
Yeah, again, apparently not being hunted down, but whatever.
She leaves a note for us.
They move very freely for refugees in space and time.
Thankfully, though, for, you know, future kissings, she leaves a note for Irish Han Solo. So hopefully,
future kissings. The John Russell story.
I hope there are future kissings in my future.
God, me too.
I'm 36. I don't know.
You'll be fine.
So... Then we're in New York again, and there's more smoking and brooding.
Smoking and brooding and drinking.
And drinking, yeah. Mm-hmm. This time by Joe, who knows Nicole.
Thank God he's clean shaven again.
I know, seriously.
God, what a dark time.
those like 2 minutes at the beginning.
You know, people are like, oh, what's the darkest part of Man in the High Castle? Oh, probably the time the hot guy had an ugly beard. Very upsetting.
It was the kind of beard that seems like it's fake because that's how bad it is.
Also,
nobody could grow a beard.
Also, it was definitely fake. Yeah. Like, yeah, he was not sporting a real beard.
Okay, so Joe knows Nicole. She arrives at his hotel room and she's very sorry for what happened to him. She tells him about her documentary. She apparently wants to be the next Leni Riefenstahl, who we are told is 60 and ready to be put down, apparently.
Okay. Like, this, again, and this isn't even... I don't have a problem with them bringing up Leni Riefenstahl. It's just like the way they bring it up. It's like, history.
Yeah.
Somebody read a book once.
What is the this show equivalent of old timey people didn't know stuff?
Oh my God. I think it's just with a German accent. Just old timey people didn't know Scheiße. You know, just because, you know, and Joe's just like, oh, the next Leni Riefenstahl. But this isn't even old timey people didn't know stuff.
Yeah.
This is old timey people. Like making things explicit for us in a way that is completely unnatural.
Alternate reality people are also in reality.
Yeah, it's just, it's just, it's so jarring and like, it just felt so ham-fisted.
So basically, this scene leads up to Nicole doing for Joe what every broken straight man needs, which is straight sex. Because that's how you heal a broken straight man.
I have tried. Okay, well, I'll say this. I once healed a broken straight man so well that he became a woman.
Huh.
Yeah, so that's my ex-spouse.
That is magic.
Right?
That is absolute magic.
It's the power of the Kelly Anakin.
That's full body experience.
Yeah, but then after that, I was just like, I can't do it anymore. I can't. It just, the best years of my life, you know? Now I'm just like, I just want to sit alone on my couch wondering why I keep watching Man in the High Castle.
So dinner at Obergruppenführer Rufus. This is so hard to say. I don't know why.
You can just call it. It's Rufus Sewell. You could just call him Rufus Sewell. You call him RS. You can do anything you want.
I can.
You're the host.
I'm the host. So dinner at ORS's house, they discuss the memorial to Thomas, which is happening tomorrow. His daughters want to know how they're supposed to feel about Thomas, and ORS, he has a very sad.
This is such a good scene.
Yeah.
It's so there, good. It's I couldn't believe it was in this show. Yeah. I was like, what are you doing to me?
Yeah.
Because this is where I think I come down on the side of I want Rufus Sewell to be my actual daddy.
Yeah.
Be my actual daddy, Rufus Sewell, because he's such a good dad. And he's such a good husband.
Yeah. He explains to his daughters that Thomas's sacrifice means that he basically doesn't belong to him, that he's a symbol now and he belongs to everybody because of the choice he made.
Well, and the girls ask, so we're supposed, you know, we can be happy and sad tomorrow. Yes. And he's like, yes, absolutely. And I think we didn't get into this, but the wife, yes, she's not dealing well, but one of the ways that she's not dealing well was she took the train to their old house. Mm. So they're living in a new house, mm-hmm. which I think is wise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when your son sacrifices himself to the Reich, you mm-hmm. want to just change things up a little bit. And she, you know, saw a little girl in the room that used to be Thomas's and wound up, I assume, just sitting out there so long. The people who lived there were like, can we take you home? We live here. And and it's just, you know, it's not a good look for them, especially now that Rufus Sewell has been promoted. And he's the first Obergruppenführer. He's the first American Obergruppenführer.
And
that was a headline in the paper.
And his wife being a little off her rocker, a little depressed, is not
great. Yeah, because you know who has a really great relationship with people with mental illness? Nazis. Super, super empathetic.
So the next day, there is, I believe, a high school being renamed after Thomas. Some important people arrive, including George Lincoln Rockwell. Again, it's like American president roulette with that
name. Okay, except this is a twofer, because this guy was a leading white supremacist contemporaneous to this time period.
So this was a real person?
This is a real person, as is J. Edgar Hoover. And again, knowing what we know about J. Edgar Hoover, I'm like, how did he survive?
Yeah, for real.
You know they found the ladies' panties. You know they did.
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay, again, these people don't just arrive unadulterated, like, at this point in history. I mean, you know, Hoover's old enough that it's like, okay, conceivably you could have fought in the war, you know, changed sides, done the whole thing.
Seen the writing on the wall.
Maybe same for George Lincoln Rockwell. So I don't mind it as much. But at the same time, it's just like, okay, but like, are you expecting us to expect them to be the way that they were?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
It feels like a bit of a stretch.
Yeah. So the long and short of Hoover and Rockwell is that they are plotting against Obergruppenführer Rufus Sewell in the men's room, no less.
And this was weird. I don't like, turns out, scenes of dudes standing at a urinal together. Like,
so many of them, weirdly.
But it's like, that doesn't happen.
No one talks to each other.
Nobody talks to each other. And like, I like, there are many benefits, I think, to being a dude. But, like, I don't have to pee next to anybody, that's, you know? Yeah, like, I don't have enough. To, like, I don't have to flash anyone before I can go to the bathroom. Like, it's just so awkward. My God.
So they're peeing and plotting.
But they're fine with it.
Yeah, peeing and plotting.
And they're also having this very, like, sensitive conversation in a public bathroom.
An echoey public bathroom.
And it's
bathroom.
Like, God, learn from the Republican senators of our timeline. Don't do anything in a public bathroom.
So it seems like they are going to use, as we were alluding to earlier, they're going to use Mrs. Obergruppenfuhrer's mental illness.
I love this. She smells like a goddamn distillery at 10 in the morning. Another line reading that I love, even though I don't enjoy this guy as much as I love Chief Inspector Keto.
Right. So we also meet someone named Thelma Harris. Is this a new character?
It's a new character. I don't believe she's based on anybody real.
She, I believe, is a gossip columnist.
She's a gossip columnist and, spoiler alert, she's a lesbian.
She
calls Nicole Dermer a world-class stimulant.
Yeah, she's definitely eager to meet Nicole. So, I got some shades of, lesbianic shades there.
It's going to be very Carol up in here.
Ooh. Rockwell makes a speech, which basically ends with Obergruppenfuhrer Rufus Sewell's daughter standing and saluting, followed by some other random kids, and then the whole assembly does. It's depressing and like, what is the point of looking at this right now? The Obergruppenfuhrer... the Obergruppenfuhrer's husband and wife team.
It's better to call them that than be like, oh, their name is Smith?
The Smiths. The Smiths seem alarmed for some reason.
I think they're overwhelmed.
Overwhelmed.
And I think what they don't do a great job of showing us in this series is like, you know, he's a company man, but I don't feel like, by and large, like the party ideals are terribly important to them. Mm. You know, what's important to them is like being able to provide for their family and that kind of thing, which I'm not like, not that that excuses, you know,
apply.
Yeah, it doesn't excuse Nazism, but it's like, oh, sort of, you know, it's like it's being taken at your word by your child, and then all of a sudden your entire life changes.
Yeah.
Because no matter what happens to them, they are always going to be associated with this like tremendously huge symbol of the Reich. So like whether the Reich, you know, what does J. Edgar Hoover say? He's a hero to last 1,000 years or whatever. So if the Reich continues, they have to kind of always be towing the party line.
Yeah.
Then, you know, there's all this stuff that they did kind of behind the scenes, like killing that doctor and like, a lot of things could go wrong for these two.
So then we get Tagomi, who has largely been absent from this episode because he has been
more Tagomi. Always be Tagomi-ing.
We picked the least Tagomi-filled episode for you, Callie. I'm so
That's
sorry.
Okay. Honestly, I would have had to have, like, explained more things if we had gone on. And I'm like, I don't know that I'm up for it.
So he's been just watching films this whole time. And he's watching a particular film in which Juliana is taken prisoner. And she's being taken to Mengele, who lives in a cave, of course, because where else would Dr. Mengele live?
Yeah.
Then there's, you know, as he's watching this film, there's a knock at his door and Juliana and Trudy show up.
And he's like, I know you from TV. Will you sign my newsreel?
And then we get the final sort of sequence of the episode. Eric shows up to Joe's hotel room with Joe's fake new passport and credentials. He finds him still smoking and brooding in an alley.
Smoking and brooding, not drinking. It's an alley.
There's no whiskey in the alley.
Oh, he could make it happen.
He really could. Joe is kind of like looking around and he says that this all used to be his life. And he says something.
Because it used to be, in case you've forgotten, he used to be a truck driver.
So he's nostalgic for his days of driving trucks. And he says, can you believe it was all so simple? And I fully thought that he and Eric were going to start singing Memories.
That would have been great.
It would have been
that
great.
That would have been... Actually, I don't hate what happens because he actually just picks up a shovel and kills Eric just like out of nowhere.
That's it. Yeah.
And like that's the end of the episode. And like some dudes come in to like get rid of Eric's body. So there's something larger at work here.
Joe's off on a new adventure, possibly not as brainwashed as we thought, maybe?
It's unclear. It's unclear even 4.5 episodes in. Because, again, I'm like, what were they brainwashing him for? I don't understand what he did that was so wrong. Because, like, I mean, he was always kind of wishy-washy on the whole, like, he only wanted to be a Nazi to impress his dad. And then they were like, oh, you want to impress your dad? Shoot your dad. And he was like, okay. And his dad was like, impressed. I imagine he was impressed to death.
It certainly left an impression.
Terrible, but amazing.
So that is the third season premiere of The Man in the High Castle.
And they're just going to keep cranking this out.
They are.
They're just going to keep making it.
Possibly with a new algorithm.
Bezos. You're a madman.
A madman. Well, Kelly, I'm sorry, and also thank you.
No, listen, I needed to get all of these feelings out into a public forum.
Yeah.
Because I've just been, like, annoying all my friends. Like, only a very few of whom watch this show. Well, no, I mean, and I have heard from a number of parties that season 3 is good.
From what you've seen.
I don't necessarily believe them. Like, I think we have different standards on what goodness is.
Mm. Kelly, thank you so much for being here. How can people find you on the interwebs?
You can find me on Twitter. I'm at Kelly Anakin. And you can check out my podcasts on Apple Podcasts. Mm. It's the new branding. It's Up Yours Downstairs or Red All Over. That's on Apple Podcasts or anywhere that podcasts can be listened to.
And I highly endorse both of those podcasts. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, John.
Hi, this is Matt Rausch, senior critic at TV Guide magazine, to give you this week's What's Worth Watching. With November looming, it's going to be a very busy month of television, but it starts off with some really great stuff at the very beginning of the month. On Friday, November 2nd, we're going to get a new series on Amazon Prime Video that brings Julia Roberts to TV. That's a big deal. The show is called Homecoming, also a big deal because it's also a new project by Sam Esmail, who directs all of the episodes. And of course, you'll know him from his visionary work on Mr. Robot. Here he's kind of playing the Hitchcock game, doing very elegant suspense over 10 episodes. And what I love about these episodes is that unlike the bloat of so many shows on streaming, wherever you look, these are half-hour episodes, basically. It's a very brisk drama, but it's elegantly told, sort of absorbing as you get into the mystery of it all. What the storyline is of Homecoming is that Julia Roberts plays a caseworker at a facility that transitions soldiers back into civilian life, or at least that's what you think it is. We are in this world with Julia Roberts where she makes a special connection to a soldier played by Stefan James, and her boss, Bobby Cannavale, keeps pushing for data and results when she's really trying to do therapy. Well, as that all plays out, we move forward 4 years to Julia Roberts' character in a very different situation. She's left the Homecoming facility. She is working as a dead-end waitress. She's living with her mom, Sissy Spacek, and she can't remember what happened 4 years ago at Homecoming. Why has her memory been erased? What happened to the soldiers she made a connection with? Why were they both released from that program on the same day? Whatever happened to him? There's lots of mysteries here, and it gets pretty twisty and convoluted. It's a really fascinating stuff. And visually, of course, Sam Esmail is a very visual director. And what I really like about this show is when you're in the present time with Julia Roberts' character, the frame shrinks around her, almost as if you can just tell that she can't see everything in her life. When you're back at the Homecoming facility 4 years ago, it's wide frame, it's full frame. She hasn't had this problem. So it's a big mystery story, and Julia Roberts is terrific playing this rather troubled character. It's only 10 episodes, and they're only half hour long, so it's a really great binge. That begins on Friday, November 2nd, on Amazon Prime Video. Also Friday, airing through Sunday, we have on the History Channel a new look at a famous political Catastrophe, Watergate. This comes from Oscar-winning documentarian Charles Ferguson, airs 6 hours over 3 nights. And if you thought that the hearings for the Supreme Court were something, you don't know what it was like in the mid-70s when the whole nation was glued to the Watergate hearings, where one scandal after another was erupting over the Nixon administration, covering up this hapless burglary of the Democratic National Committee and the Watergate Hotel. And it was a silly event, but it became a huge crisis, a constitutional crisis. And it led to the almost impeachment and the resignation of President Nixon a year later. You watch the hearings play out. You have interviews with the journalists and the politicians who are still around from that time. And you just realize that as crazy as the politics of today are, it was pretty bad back then, too. We don't know how it's going to turn out this time. But even though you know how it plays out in the Watergate story, it still seems like a suspense thriller. And they use actual recordings of Nixon from his White House tapes reenacted by actors, which almost comes off like a Saturday Night Live spoof somewhat because it's so outrageous. But every word is true. And so Watergate, again, it's a fascinating watch, airs Friday through Sunday on the History Channel. On Sunday, something a lot of people have been waiting a long time for, a fourth season of Outlander on Stars. This is the sizzling romantic drama of Claire and Jamie, who have now gone from Scotland. They have washed up on the shores of pre-revolutionary colonial America. We're in the 1770s. The Revolutionary War has not started yet, and Claire and Jamie are setting up shop in colonial Carolinas. Of course, back in the 20th century, her daughter is still trying to figure out what the heck happened to her mom going through the stones, and we'll see what happens in that storyline as well. This is based on the fourth book in Diana Gabaldon's very popular Outlander series, and each season pretty much takes on one book, and they've done a very faithful job of translating these very addictive stories into great romantic storytelling. Catriona Balfe and I always get her name wrong, and Sam Heughan, they are just absolutely wonderful as these characters. And even in their 40s, they are still hot for each other, which is another great reason that people watch the show. Claire and Jamie have never lost their love for each other and for exploration. And there's a sense that as they become citizens of this new world, who knows where Outlander is going to take you. The new season begins Sunday on Stars, and you're really going to want to be there. And that'll do it for another edition of TV Babble. We'll be back in 2 weeks to talk about more TV and to help you choose what you should be making time for and maybe what you should skip. Thank you to our producer, Lori Perna, and remember to subscribe to the TV Babble podcast so you don't miss a single episode.